For today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of the Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, Paul Brought Before the Governor, as we pick up in Acts chapter 24, verse 1. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
Shall we turn now to chapter 24? In the book of Acts. Paul had been seen in the temple worshiping God by some of the Jews that were from Asia who were familiar with Paul's ministry among the Gentiles. They immediately began to cry out against his being there in the temple, stirring up the Jews who grabbed hold of Paul and were in the process of beating him to death. When Paul was rescued by those Roman soldiers, the guards, who were dispatched from Antonio Fortress to free him from this angry mob there on the Temple Mount. Paul attempted to talk to the people from the steps of the Antonio Fortress, recounting for them his conversion. But when he made mention of the Gentiles, it just created a riot. The next day, the Roman captain, Lysias, wanted to find out just what the ruckus was all about, so he called for the Sanhedrin and had Paul appear before them that they might make their charges. And Paul, in giving his defense, knowing that they were divided between the Sadducees and Pharisees, said, I am a Pharisee, the son of the Pharisee, and because I believe in the resurrection from the dead, I'm here before you. And the Pharisees immediately took his part. The Sadducees took out against him. They had such a rabble between themselves, the captain thought they were going to tear Paul to pieces. So the second time, he rescued them from the Jewish people. And then Paul's nephew heard that 40 men had taken a vow not to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. And so they went to the high priest, exposed their vow and their plot, and they said, now you call for Paul tomorrow afternoon, like you want to ask him some questions, and while they're bringing him to you, we're going to jump him and kill him. So the nephew came in and told Paul. Paul sent his nephew to the captain, who then commanded that in the middle of the night, some 200 spearmen, 70 cavalrymen, and 200 foot soldiers accompanied Paul from Jerusalem to take him to Caesarea under the protective custody of the Roman government. And now Paul has come down to Caesarea, and the elders of Israel are invited to come down and prefer their charges against Paul there. So that brings us to the beginning of chapter 24. After 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, descended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. And now we have this fellow Tertullus, the orator, who is so flattering to this wicked man Felix that it is nauseating. And so when this Tertullus, when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse Paul, saying, first of all to Felix, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence. We accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that you would hear of us thy clemency a few words. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition among all of the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. Now, these are very serious charges that Tertullus is pressing against Paul, because one thing that the Roman government did not tolerate, and that was an uprising in the provinces against Rome. And the Jews had a history of rebellion that the Roman Empire had to already put down in the past, and they knew that there were those who were constantly inciting the people to riot against the Roman rule. And so the charges of a pestilent fellow, one who stirs up sedition among the Jews, the idea is that he is stirring up sedition against the Roman rule, and he is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarene. Now, there were many religious uprisings in Israel, many men who would gather together groups of men around them, and who would then, in their religious fanaticism, inspire them to rebel against Rome. So he is saying, you've got a fellow here who is the ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And as such, he is apt to stir them into a religious fervor to rebel against Rome. And who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. Now, it sounds from Tertullus that they arrested Paul and were going to bring him to trial. Far from the truth. Paul was caught by a mob, and it was a lynching mob. They were going to lynch him. And so he is certainly misrepresenting the truth to Felix. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us and with great violence took him away out of our hands. In reality, Lysias rescued Paul from being beaten to death by the mob. And then he commanded his accusers to come unto thee, and by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all of the things whereof we accuse him. And all of the Jews that had come with him were assenting, saying that these things were so. Now, notice that all of the charges were without substantial witnesses. Everything that they were declaring was hearsay. None of them could give actual testimony against Paul in these things. So Paul, speaking in his own defense, after the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, he answered, "For as much as I know that you have been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that you may understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem to worship." So it was just 12 days earlier, Paul had gone to Jerusalem from Caesarea, or actually it was just 12 days that he'd been in Jerusalem. He had probably been 15 days from Caesarea to Jerusalem. And it was just 12 days that I was in Jerusalem, and I'd gone to worship the Lord. "And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city. They didn't find me doing any of these things. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me." And so Paul is denying the charges that are made against him, declaring that they are not able to prove any of them. They have not found me doing these things that they declare, so that their declarations would only be hearsay. "This I confess unto thee, that after the way, which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers. The term the way was the term used in the early church to describe themselves. They were living a new way of life, with Jesus at the center of their life. Jesus had said to his disciples, "I am the way. No man comes to the Father but by me." And so they picked up this term, the way, and they used it to describe the Christian fellowship in the early years of the church. And at least six times, this term, the way, is used to describe the believers in the book of Acts. The term Christian was not at all a common term, nor really a biblical term for Christianity in the beginning. It became a term used ultimately because Peter, in writing his epistle, said, "If any of you suffer as a Christian." But that is the only time the term Christian was used by Christians in the New Testament, whereas the term the way was used many different times and was a far more common name for the followers of Jesus Christ than the name Christian. The name Christian is used only three times in all of the New Testament, where it mentions in Antioch that there the disciples were first called Christians. Next week in the 26th chapter of Acts, as Agrippa challenges Paul, "Almost thou persuadest me to become a Christian." So that there it was used not by the Christians themselves, but by others who were referring to those who were believers in Jesus Christ. But the way to God through Christ. And so after the way, which they call heresy, "I worship the God of my fathers," or he had come to worship God through Jesus Christ, recognizing that Jesus is the only way by which a man can approach God. The second thing Paul confessed, "I believe all the things which are written in the law and in the prophets." In making this declaration, he is declaring his belief in all of those prophecies concerning Jesus, or concerning the Messiah, and then his belief that Jesus was the Messiah. The Old Testament is full, all relating to the Messiah, prophecies that Jesus literally fulfilled. And if you will just take the chance factors of one man fulfilling these prophecies, you will find that it becomes solid proof that Jesus indeed was the Messiah, could not have fulfilled these unless he was indeed the Messiah. His place of birth, "And thou Bethlehem, though thou be little among the provinces of Judah, yet out of thee shall come he who is to rule my people, whose going forth is from old, from everlasting." There's only one chance in 250,000 for a person to be born in Bethlehem, the little village. And yet Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And right on down the line, you can take the prediction after prediction and find out that Jesus literally fulfilled it. And so Paul said, "I believe the prophets and the law, all of the things which are written in the law and in the prophets." That's more than what you can say for a lot of ministers today who have sought to eliminate much of the law and the prophets, as well as much of the New Testament. Paul declared himself to be a believer in all of these things. Paul the Apostle, when he would go into a new community, would usually go into the synagogue and just take their scriptures and teach them concerning the Messiah out of their own scriptures, and then he would go about to show that Jesus was the Messiah. And that can be done very easily with the scriptures of the Old Testament. Jesus said, you do search the scriptures because in them you think you have life, but actually they testify of me. And again, I have come as it is written of me in the volume of the book to do thy will, O Lord. And as you go through the Old Testament with the anointing and in the enlightenment of the Holy Spirit, you find that Jesus is there in every page. You remember how the Ethiopian eunuch was on his way back, and there in the Gaza Strip when Philip met him, he was reading the scriptures, and Philip began at that place and preached Christ unto him. And that would be possible in just about any place in the Old Testament. You could begin at that verse and preach Christ. The volume of the book is written of him. And so Paul just declares, hey, I believe in those prophecies. And of course, even in the law, there were so many prophecies concerning the coming of the Messiah. And then Paul confessed, and I have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. So Paul's belief in the resurrection, both of the just and the unjust. Now, of course, in the book of Revelation, we find out that there will be actually two resurrections, one of the just and the second of the unjust. And there will be approximately 1,000 years intervening between the two resurrections. The rest of the dead lived not until the 1,000 years were expired. Blessed is he who taketh part in the first resurrection. Over him the second death has no power. I believe that the first resurrection takes place over a period of time, that Jesus was indeed the first fruits of those who rise from the dead. And as he said, he who lives and believes in me shall never die. And that for the child of God, death is an immediate transition from this old tent into the new house. And that Revelation chapter 19 is in fact the account of the first resurrection, that is the completion of it. The final ones to enter into that first resurrection are those martyred saints during the tribulation period, and they complete the first resurrection. But I believe that the minute a person's spirit has moved out of this body, that it moves in to the new building of God, not made with hands. Paul the Apostle, writing his Corinthian epistle, the second one, said that we know that when this earthly tabernacle, or this earthly tent, our earthly body, this tabernacle, is dissolved, that is, when my body goes back to dust, that we have a building of God, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So then we who are in these bodies do often groan, earnestly desiring to be delivered or earnestly desiring to move out of them. Not, he said, that I would become unclothed or not that I would be an unembodied spirit. My earnest desire isn't to be some ether essence in the atmosphere, unembodied spirit. But I desire to be clothed upon with the body which is from heaven. Or I desire to move into my new house, the building of God not made with hands. So then, we who are in this body do often groan, earnestly desiring to be delivered, not that we would be unclothed, but to be clothed upon with the body which is from heaven. For we know that as long as we are living in these bodies, at home in these bodies, we are absent from the Lord. But we would choose rather to be absent from these bodies and be present with the Lord. So someday when you read in the paper Chuck Smith died, don't believe that. Jesus said, if I live and believe in him, I'll never die. So call the reporters and say, that's poor reporting. Chuck Smith moved out of an old worn out tent and into a beautiful new house, a building of God, not made with hands. You see, the Bible teaches that man basically is spirit, not body. We relate to each other through our bodies, and we come to associate each other with our bodies, but the real me is spirit. The body is just the instrument by which my spirit can express itself. But the body isn't me. And one day I'm going to leave this body. And I'm going to leave this body and I'm going to move in to a new house. This is an old tent. It's wearing out. But I'm going to move into the building of God. Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. Now people, I'm sure, have a wrong concept of that. As you think of some beautiful estate on 10 acres with beautiful gardens and a 10-bedroom mansion, you know. Big columns in the front, and you know, you each have your dream mansion. I really believe that Jesus was referring to the building of God not made with hands, that new body that he has for me. He said, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place, I'm going to come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. You see, in my new body, I'm not going to need a bathroom or a bedroom. So he's talking about the building of God, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Notice the contrast, a tent. A tent is always considered as transient, temporal. The building of God, eternal in the heavens. The tent to the building of God.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Acts on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of The Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Acts 24. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
Now may the Lord be with you and watch over you and keep you through the week. May you be strengthened by His Spirit in your inner man. And may you, through the understanding of the Spirit, begin to comprehend how much He really loves you. The full depth of God's love for you. May He watch over you, and may you find your strength and your help in Him.
The Word for Today presents Biblical Counseling, a powerful resource that covers over 200 real-life topics. Whether you're a believer or not, we all face tough situations in life. In Biblical Counseling, Pastor Chuck Smith addresses these challenges with clear, compassionate insight. Each topic is listed alphabetically and includes Pastor Chuck's commentary along with practical illustrations to help you understand what God says about your situation. When you're feeling confused or discouraged, and man's advice isn't enough, turn to God's Word, because He's already given you the counsel you need. Order Biblical Counseling today at TWFT.com or call 1-800-272-9673. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. It's not the way it used to be.
This program program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.